This is Kevin Conroy, and you're listening to The Drift Space.
Initiating neural magic in 3, 2, 1.
Listen to Top Five.
Yeah, Rebecca.
I don't know. Do you?
Is this your first episode?
This is what happens when you cross Rebecca. She doesn't let you host for at least 12 or 13 episodes.
It's going to be my. This is your first episode of our season 2, isn't it?
Honestly, I'm just happy to see my little profile on the picture. I mean, good lord.
She really does hate you.
I feel like the wedding singer. You know that line where he's like, I have the microphone, and you don't. So you will listen to every damn word I have to say. If I can remember my own name, I think I'm JR.
I thought I was JR.
I'm JR.
Nah, I'm Rebecca.
Rebecca retains her own identity. Yeah.
Rebecca and her minions.
Don't link me in with you three.
Rebecca's a promiscuous old man and we're all little black widows.
Ew, No. I don't want to be Harvey Weinstein.
That was good.
I didn't make that connection until now, and I think it applies.
It applies. Yep.
Yeah.
Using pheromones against people? Yes, it applies.
Oh, yeah. Everybody's lusting after Harvey's pheromones. God. You ever smelled bacon grease?
More butter. It's good to be back in a host chair, and for an MCU movie, nonetheless, this week we discuss the latest of the MCU movies and the final film within the Infinity Saga, Black Widow. Now, first I'd like to point out, we finally get an answer to a question we've had long ago in Avengers. What happened in Budapest? So we learned that Romanoff and Hawkeye have successfully taken down a Red Room, which is the organization that is known for kidnapping little girls and turning them into the assassins known as Black Widow. All that comes crashing down when her sister says, "Hey, poser, you missed one." And she reunites with her old family to take down the new one that they've missed. With a new twist on the whole assassin thing, instead of being brainwashed, they are literally controlling their thoughts. So, this is something S.H.I.E.L.D.'s been working on without anybody knowing. Good to know. But seriously, I think we need to take a moment and discuss the real topic here. And that is, I think the real topic here is that Hopper has done such a good job of infiltrating Russia's general intelligence that they've made him into the Russian super soldier.
I was expecting to see 11 show up and break him out.
Surprisingly, more nosebleeds didn't happen.
More Eggo waffle product placement.
Anyway, I honestly don't know too much about the Black Widow, so I can't really give you a background analysis of her origin story or any of that. So I think it's just appropriate to jump right into the movie. But before we do, I'd also like to point out, you know, like the past 4 or 5 movies we've covered, they've all tend to been talking about family. Are we seeing a pattern here? Are you sure?
I did make that connection, yeah. No,
crossover? Jared, I have to correct you on something real quick, though.
What's up?
It's Budapest.
Yeah, Budapest.
I was waiting. Shut up.
I hate you.
Oh, that was so annoying.
It really was.
So let's start with Dave's thoughts, since Dave's so willingly talking about this.
Me and my wife argued about it. I'll put it that way.
I could see no quarter happening in that argument, by the way.
No, as someone who has been very well traveled in the Europe area, she was like, that's how you say it. It's like, whatever, why don't you go to Pragui or whatever it's called? God. I think the thing I want to say most about this is Florence Pugh stole the show for me. Her performance was so, so good. And at some points, I honestly forgot it was a Black Widow movie. And I thought it was just like the Florence Pugh show. And that's not saying anything negative about Scarlett Johansson, Rachel Weisz, David Harbour. All great. But they gave Florence Pugh so much to do in this. And it just really, really worked for me. I was wowed by her. I also, like we've already sort of talked about, Hopper being in this, our very own David Harbour. I enjoyed his character to an extent. He got a little exhausting for me from time to time, but he was really chewing on the scenery and really, really playing it up. And I always appreciate sort of like the comedic beats that David Harbour brings to the table. Everything Rachel Weisz does is just fantastic to me. But I will say that as far as like the plot goes of this film, shadow organization doing some like Illuminati stuff in the background, working in the shadows, sleeper agents, it just felt like a retelling of Winter Soldier, and overall kind of generic to me, I guess. But what I did appreciate was the emphasis on the emotional investment and the character study of the, you know, quote, Romanov family, if you will. I enjoyed that, and how gross Harvey Weinstein was. That was something else.
You know, it's really unfortunate that I feel like that actor's name, Dreykov's name, the actor Ray Winstone, shares almost too close of a name.
The other thing I'll say is it took me, I mean, granted, heavy prosthetics, heavy makeup, but it took me longer than I'm proud of to realize that Taskmaster was Olga Kurylenko. It took me all the way till the credits to get that. I was like, where do I know her from? I was like, oh yeah, Bond girl, of course.
Well, I saw her name at the beginning of the credits, and I kept waiting for her. I was like, is that her? Is that her? Is that her? And then it hit me, oh, no, she's going to be Taskmaster. That's what's going to
happen. Yeah.
Which one was, which Bond girl?
Quantum of Solace.
Oh, I didn't, was that the second one?
Well, no, it was not the second one, but it was one after Casino Royale.
I mean, yes, the second
Daniel Craig one. Daniel Craig, yes.
Yes, yes.
Okay, not second chronological order.
Yeah, I mean. It's like we have a long history lesson ahead of us. Buckle up, kids.
Surprise, this is not actually the Black Widow, but James Bond.
And
Dave will be your host.
Dave takes over, right. Right.
Dave, I really agree with you there. I got really bored with the movie, honestly, until we started hitting a character study of dissecting this family of spies that actually did come together and form a somewhat unorthodox family, and how they raised their children, even though it was, you know, all a facade. Raise their children to have the morals that they thought were correct. And I thought one of the most interesting scenes out of the whole movie was them sitting there at the dinner table having that discussion.
Yeah, and so that was one of the kind of disappointing things for me that I probably didn't articulate well. The movie, to me, it started off really strong as like an espionage spy flick, right? And I feel like they kind of abandoned that a little bit, and it just kind of became a run-of-the-mill action film trying to take down an organization.
I totally agree. Like, well, to a point, the first half of it, when it showed everybody in their childhood living in Ohio, that's when I was the most intrigued. I was like, wait a minute, I forgot, they're running from S.H.I.E.L.D. I was like, why is S.H.I.E.L.D. chasing them? I was like, oh yeah, they're the bad guys. So that part got me really, like, invested into the movie, and then we started getting into the, like, stereotypical Marvel movie, and I was like, all right, I've lost interest.
Yeah, and I wasn't bored with it either. It was an enjoyable watch. Like I said, Florence Pugh is just Charm City in this. I've said enough about her, but
you really haven't. You really haven't. I'm the
more.
Okay. I'm right there with you. No, she.
Dave, tell us how you really feel about Florence Pugh.
Her, oh, chef's kiss. Just put her in everything. Especially, I like how, and I'm kind of going on a little bit of a tangent here, but one of the moments that really sticks out for me was when they were in that, like, convenience store gas station thing, and she starts giving,
oh, I love that part,
Natasha crap for being a poser and doing her little hair whip thing.
Amazing. But then she, like, tries it herself later on.
She just goes, ugh. And to me, that felt like a Frozen 2 moment where Elsa is, like, down in the Cave of Wonders or whatever, and she sees herself saying "Let it go," and she just goes, ugh. Like, she can't stand herself.
I honestly want to sit down with this movie and see how much of it was improvised, because I have a feeling everything that came out of David's mouth about Captain America was improvised. I'm sure they were just like, no, keep going. Keep going. Has he talked about me?
That's another thing that kind of carried the movie. It was like, you know, we joke about the family dynamic, but the chemistry between our Romanov family, for lack of a better word here, spot on. I totally bought it. Just this dysfunctional family that just kind of sticks together, even though they're really messed up.
Just putting it lightly.
Oh, and Florence Pugh, real quick.
Gee, Rebecca, we haven't heard much from you.
Oh, okay. Well, thank you.
Would you like to end the podcast now?
Yes, I would love to. Thank you so much, JR. You're so kind.
16 minutes in.
Well, okay, by the time she's done.
Okay, so I think it's safe to say, in my opinion, this is probably one of the darkest MCU films out there due to the subject matter of child trafficking. I mean, that intro after Natasha and Yelena were taken was quite intense and quite disturbing. I think it was Nirvana playing, a Nirvana cover playing. It was pretty gruesome. Anyway, yeah, despite being so dark and uncomfortable, I think they did a pretty good job in trying to give it humor and lighter moods. It kind of reminded me of some episodes from the television show MASH. MASH is a perfect example of using humor and lining up moods to use and to survive with in the middle of a war and human suffering. However, unlike MASH, a lot of sensitive subject matter is revealed, a more sensitive subject. Here's an example, like how the Red Guardian made a comment whether it was Yelena's time of the month, and how she and Natasha responded so casually and nonchalantly with intricate, uncomfortable details of their forced hysterectomies, while Alexei is in the background getting comically nauseous, and finally says, all right, then of course Yelena adds a finishing blow, saying, I haven't even told you what they use the fallopian tubes for, which I admittedly did crack up at that last part. Then of course you have the dinner scene where the Soviet nuclear family reunited, and
oh, that was bad.
That's why the podcast just ended.
And it almost seems like they're picking up where they all left off. I mean, Red Guardian was playing the dad role, Milena being the mom and telling Natasha not to slouch, Yelena being a somewhat moody teenager. Of course, you have Alexei telling Milena that he has a lot of stamina from being in jail for so long, clearly grossing out Natasha and Yelena. As we discussed before, I think one of my favorite scenes was when, with both Natasha and Yelena, and debating whether Nat likes Yelena's vest that she bought for herself. I pretty much loved all of their sister scenes together. I loved how they were not trying to up one another or take down each other like Gamora and Nebula did. I liked how they acted like sisters. I liked how they bounced off each other. I especially liked how Yelena points out Natasha is a poser whenever she's about to fight. It actually got me thinking all those times from Iron Man 2 to Avengers to Ultron to Civil War to Infinity War to Endgame. I honestly haven't really given a second glance, and somehow during this film, thanks to her, it dawned on me, oh my god, she's right. She does pose.
They all do.
I mean, yeah, but her in particular was more,
you know,
it just never...
Superhero landing.
I know, exactly. It never caught up to me. I just figured, oh, that's just normal. That's what they do. And I liked how this film basically tells you that facing your fear and embracing your pain will make you stronger. People debate who is the strongest Avenger ever, whether it's Hulk or Thor or Captain America, it's Captain Marvel, Scarlet Witch, or Iron Man. But I think it's Natasha. She was taken from her mother, turned into a slave, and had almost every ounce of her individuality erased, both physically and psychologically, to become a cold-blooded killer. However, she fought her way out of that downward spiral. She dared to face her fear and use her pain for growth, and not as a hindrance or excuse. She did all of that with zero superpowers and whatever she was given, along with her wit. It was proven by this film that she is the ideal big sister figure that wants to protect her loved ones. She's proven that you don't need to be related to someone to have family. She's not only a good role model for all girls, but for girls who were left behind, who were unwanted. She's a prime example of telling those girls on the street that you can make it. You do have a choice. You are worth something. Black Widow is by far the strongest Avenger in the MCU because she's proven that the biggest steps to change is from within yourself. Everything else will follow through. And I love Scarlett Johansson's portrayal of Black Widow. And after seeing this film, it just made me miss her character even more.
So I agree with you in terms of the themes being fairly dark and what they're trying to portray. And I agree with Dave in that, you know, I think the strongest parts of the film were definitely the prologue, the intro credits, and what that sets up. It was a very uncomfortable thing to watch, especially early on. But I don't think the film follows through with it. And I don't know. Let's stop beating around the bush. What is child trafficking, these little girls being trafficked? What is typically that traffic used for? Anyone?
Sex
trafficking. Okay, so when we know that this is that both is it Milena or Yelena? That's Florence Pugh. This Yelena. Was a, okay.
Yelena.
This was another issue with the movie. Yelena and Milena, two similar of names. They should have done something with that there, but. When Yelena
yeah, but they're spelled differently.
Great.
Yeah, GJ.
So happy. when Yelena was broken of, like, her, you know, spell, whatever, she doesn't act like a person who's really been violated. You know, I mean, she's at the kind of garage gas station place cracking jokes with Natasha. And, you know, she's cracking jokes about her vest that she, you know, eventually gives to Natasha for Avengers Infinity War. And it was kind of, I get it. You know, these are escapist movies and they want to kind of draw attention to an issue, but they still want to be their escapist themed film. That's okay. All right, fine. But then we get to stuff like their would-be father, Alexei, who wraps his arms around both the girls and says, "I'm so proud of you. You've become the greatest, you know, murderer on the face of the planet. You're an Avenger. You've killed so many people." And it's supposed to come off as levity and comedic and whatnot, but I was kind of grossed out by him, because if we look at the situation, the Red Room and whatnot as a metaphor for sex trafficking, he's sitting there with his arms around his two daughters being like, "I'm so proud of you for being so good at sex with whatever a hundred people has paid to do that with you." And it bothered me. It came off wrong. And it got even worse when Alexei went into the room that Yelena wanted to be by herself in. And he goes in and he sits down next to her and said, "Okay, we don't have to talk." But he ends up talking, of course, because he can't shut up. And he talks and talks and talks. And she finally, you know, she's had enough of him. And then he starts singing the song, American Pie, that, you know, she listened to when she was growing up undercover in Ohio. It was Ohio, right?
Yeah, it was Ohio.
And he starts singing that song. And then she comes around and she smiles at him. And I'm watching this movie thinking, oh, yeah, Stockholm Syndrome. It rubs me the wrong way. And I think that if we were going to tackle a topic as awful as sex trafficking, we shouldn't have had a character in there kind of making light of what was standing in for it symbolically.
I'm glad you're not the only one who felt that way, because I felt the same way when he was like, I mean, at the time I was in the movie, I didn't connect the sex trafficking and all that, but I'm glad I wasn't the only one who didn't feel uncomfortable or who felt uncomfortable with that. Just being like, "I'm so proud that you've killed hundreds of thousands of people." And
well, hopefully not that, maybe not thousands, but well, just,
I mean,
but you know what he's saying, right?
Yeah. The implication that she's become the world's best killer, both of them have. And it's a very like, yeah, you're right. Very levity moment, but it's like, ha, not really.
Not really. And if it's standing in for sex trafficking, why are you fat gross man praising this? Which brings me to another thing. What did Alexei do in this movie? What was his purpose in the film? They pick him up and they tell, he explains to them where their would-be mother Melina is, but they could have found that information out any other way. There was no reason to bring him in except for a few really forced jokes, I thought.
I think he provides an ignorant, stark contrast to the realities of what Yelena and Natasha had to go through.
Okay. But then Yelena and Natasha don't even act like they've really gone through anything that's truly violated them. I mean, there's cracking jokes at each other the entire movie.
Well, think about it.
It doesn't come off. If you're going to tackle something this dark and this serious, I feel like it should come off a little more heavy, with a little more stakes involved.
I agree to an extent. I think the way that they played it off is fitting with their characters, though. I think having it any other way would have been out of character.
I can agree with that, because, you know, not only are we talking about the Romanoff quote-unquote family, but throughout several points of this movie, she's said, I have two families. One of them is just broken right now. And, you know, part of Romanoff is her trying to avenge and trying to make up for what she's done. So she's, I mean, character development. I mean,
I don't know. That didn't sit well with me either. Oh, I have two families. It's a nice sentiment, but one of your families sold you off to be a brainwashed killer and tore your uterus out. It really rubbed me the wrong way.
I can understand why it would rub you the wrong way. I really do. But at the same time, I think Alexei and Malena, they were just as much victims as Natasha and Yelena too. Not as bad though, but Malena did have to undergo through what the two girls went through, and
Alexei was imprisoned. I know.
Yeah, he was imprisoned, used, and then imprisoned. I mean, I'm not trying to give them an excuse that what they did was right. No, of course not. But I think this was also an opportunity for them to right what they've done wrong at the same time. I mean,
and you know, I buy that with Malena. I really do. I think she was necessary to the story. I think it was necessary for her to be the one to lead the charge against the Harvey Weinstein of this movie. And that made sense, but they didn't need Alexei. He provided a, yeah, Dave, I'll go with you, a sense of misunderstanding, but to the point that came off more insulting than thought-provoking.
Okay, that's fair.
I mean, another way, something you pointed out is that, you know, the I have two families thing, and I know that's a cliche, but you know, you have the family that raised you and, you know, taught you the morals and all that, and then you have your chosen family, your friends, and I can see, I've known people and I've met people who have said, yes, I have a biological family and this is what I've learned from them. And they say, yeah, they raised me. They taught me some sense of morals. But then you have your chosen family, the ones, the friends that you surround yourself with, the ones you actually, you know, learn to be around, learn to be better around. So I can kind of, like, that wasn't so cliche with me. I understood what they were trying to do with Romanoff. And her saying, yes, this is my past. This is a dark past. But here are the people that are trying to make me better, who want me to be better. So I kind of see what she was saying when she brought that up.
Well, I think it's a nice sentiment. And I have no problem with the, you know, having two family sentiment. I just don't think that one of her families should be considered such because of the way they treated her. And again, if we go back to the sex trafficking theme, it just comes off as extraordinarily egregious.
And that's, I agree with that. And if it's one person that needs to be truly blamed for all of that, it's definitely a Dreykov, the Soviet Weinstein, which I absolutely loathed. I hated that character so much, which is good because that means the actor Ray Winstone did a great job on portraying such a character. He nailed that sadistic role. It wasn't bad enough that he was taking girls from the street then inflicting pain and brainwashing them. He did it to his own daughter, his own flesh and blood, and his only excuse was to punish Natasha for trying to have her killed. The last time I remembered seeing such a villain abusing their own child for their own selfish purposes was Stryker in X2, when he had his mutant son surgically altered to follow his father's every command. But the difference between Stryker and Dreykov was that Stryker was motivated by hatred and fear, meaning he was probably once a good man who cared deeply and loved his son, but unfortunately, allowed fear to take over and destroy who he was. Dragov, on the other hand, did it by sheer pleasure and sadism. He had no redeeming values whatsoever. He literally was a regular Frieza during that time, which kind of almost begs the next question. Will we see more of Antonia Dreykov and the other Black Widows in future films or shows?
I hope we get something a little more special with Taskmaster.
I'm not fully aware of the character. I wasn't sure if this was a homegrown character the movie decided to make up or if this was a comic-centric character. Neither surprised me. Can someone shed some light on that one?
Well, we had a question on this. I was going to save it, but it's, I mean, since we're getting on topic of it, I'll go ahead and say it now. So we have a question from the Monster Island Film Vault, Nathan, and he asks, what did you think of the movie treatment of Taskmaster, who is vastly different from the comics? So I don't know too much about Taskmaster in the comics. What I do know is that he was raised on as an assassin, and it's a debate whether it's considered a superpower or if he's just hyper-observant, but he can mimic basically anybody, any language, any fighting style, and he's basically just an assassin for hire within the comics, from what I understand. I actually think I enjoyed this treatment of Taskmaster more, of someone being forcibly controlled. I hated what he did to her, but I find it interesting that it's a robotic implant that allows her to mimic everything. And the most interesting concept for me is when they actually freed her from the microchip, the mind control, and she like caught her breath for the first time and she started crying and she says, "Is he gone?" And, you know, going back to the sex trafficking thing, gee, this is where I saw the payoff. Because while all the other girls didn't really, they were just brainwashed by some kind of chemical, her own father went in and surgically did this to her. He forced his daughter to become a killing machine. Literally had no control over it. So when she has that breath of fresh air, her own free will to breathe, and she starts crying, "Is he gone? Is he dead?" That's where I saw the payoff.
Yeah, I also don't know a ton about Taskmaster. I've talked about it before. I'm much more of a DC guy, but so I can't really speak to how true to form this Taskmaster was, although I have heard it's vastly different. But I thought the way that they leveraged the character really played well into the story and to this into the idea of trafficking. I thought it played very well into that, and it had played a huge part in amplifying the emotional weight of that metaphor, or not so much a metaphor, but what it is, what it is, right? It was trafficking,
right? Yeah, no, it was, and I think, you know, I can only go off the movie and how, you know, it portrayed the character. And I think the Taskmaster was one of the stronger aspects to the film. And JR, I'll give you that kind of payoff moment, even though I don't think it wipes the slate clean of other issues I have. But it was an interesting character to watch within the context of the narrative. A lot of people I've read have said, "Oh, it's just basically Winter Soldier 2.0." Fair, okay, but at the same time, though, I think the narrative themes that the character is kind of like carrying on her shoulders is different from what Bucky went through. And yeah, I'd like to see her again. I'd also like to see Florence Pugh again as not Melina,
Yelena.
Yeah, whatever.
I don't think we've talked about Florence Pugh.
Oh my God, Florence Pugh.
Yeah, we need to.
Yeah, we need to introduce her into the podcast here. So yeah, awesome. And I know I kind of I talked about how I didn't think the character reacting the way she did after being freed of the mind control was really in line with the themes it was going for. But I do have to agree with Dave that despite that, Florence Pugh really gave an impressive and charismatic performance. I was really into her the whole movie, regardless of how I felt the character should have been portrayed. And honestly, I hope we get more of her in future MCU movies, shows. I know she's slated to return for the Hawkeye show. But I kind of hope she, you know, ends up taking up the mantle of that Natasha had and, you know, joins a new Avengers team eventually down the line, because I think she has the charisma to carry the Black Widow mantle.
Absolutely.
I think so. What did you guys think of the action sequences in this movie?
I liked them. I thought they were very Marvel-esque, Marvel-less. Yeah,
in that same light, it felt like, you know, generic Marvel action sequences to me.
Yeah, I was kind of in the same boat. It hurts that at this point, at this stage, you really have to do something different in order to get my attention. It either has to be a sort of minimalistic, no CGI, wide shot of incredible stunts a la John Wick, or you just have to do something hilariously over the top, like, you know, swing a car from one island to another, Tarzan style. You know, and because that stuff is exciting. That stuff is cheerworthy. It's fun. Whereas, you know, I feel like I've seen battles amongst falling debris before and done better, I might add. It was fine, but I couldn't help but think of someone hit the upgrade button on like 1990s action movies. And I want to point out the sequence where they rescue Alexei, which, by the way, went on too long. But they have a helicopter there. A few of them have to go down, fight off a few soldiers, and then, you know, get them up. And if this were in the 1990s, they would have probably cut it down a little bit due to budget. And because we didn't quite have the refined technology then as we do today, I doubt we would have seen an avalanche come down, which almost seems like overkill. I could see the screenwriters thinking to themselves, man, how can we make this scene more intense? Avalanche. And it just comes off as needless escalation.
But GJ, it'll be such a cool way to die.
It would be a cool way to die, yeah. Cool way to die, yep.
Ha ha. Ha ha. Snow.
Ice cool. To see you.
Okay, chill. Everyone. Chill. What the ice of the dinosaurs? The Ice Age!
The Iceman cometh.
I risked my case on 1990s action movies.
A DC one, no less.
A DC one, no less.
I don't want any of this to take away from the action sequences are impressive.
No, I'm not saying they're not.
I just don't think they were anything unique.
Agreed.
The fight, you know, the hand to hand fight choreography is always super fun to watch. You know, what flippity floppities are we going to do this time? And I'm always like, wow, I can't bend like that.
Neither can they. Most of the time it's CG.
Right. But it looks cool. I'm entertained by it. Okay. I just don't think it didn't wow me. And I think that's sort of like this, a shame in that, you know, we've had dozens of great superhero movies come out that have great fight choreography and action scenes. And GJ, like you said, you really have to do something different now in order to sort of stick out.
like swing a car from one island to another via
swing a car. Yeah.
Or fly a car into space.
I don't want this to come off as nitpicking now, because it's clear I wasn't very hot on the movie. But I do think that with all the money and the talent going into the MCU these days, some stunt choreographer or special effects technician would look at the situation and think, what can we do to really stick out, to really wow the audience again? And I know we're not dealing with Iron Man or Thor or anything like that, but I don't think that's an excuse for creating something unique unto the film that we're watching.
Yeah, and on the same token, though, I don't think Black Widow was ever meant to rest on the action sequences. I think Black Widow rests on strong female characters, which it has.
Right.
And I thought that was something very unique for a Marvel film. And I thought it did very well in that aspect.
And, well, I think the characters could have been handled a little differently given the narrative situation that we discussed earlier that we've beaten with a dead horse. But beaten with a dead horse.
Wow.
I am now using dead horses to beat more dead horses.
You're going to throw an avalanche on top of that too?
This isn't Final Fantasy VII. All right. So it's that we should have gotten this movie much earlier. And this is not, I understand this isn't a criticism of the film itself, but it does feel like the sequel to a Black Widow movie we never got. If you think about all the exposition that sets up this movie, the origin story, the background in Ohio, the fact that Budapest had to be explained to us in endless exposition and flashback, kind of felt like that we were missing a movie before this. This almost felt like Black Widow 2, where Harvey Weinstein got away from the explosion at the end of Black Widow 1 or something. And I get it that we're kind of too deep into the MCU right now to go back that far is what I'm kind of feeling from the decision to place the movie in the time frame that was placed. But, you know, you should have pulled the trigger on a Black Widow film much earlier then is kind of where I sit.
I couldn't agree more, and that was one of my final sort of issues that I had with this is the placement, you know, where we're at in the MCU phases, timeline, whatever, and when this was released, it almost felt like an afterthought.
Uh-huh.
And I feel like, you know, Scarlett Johansson has done a great job developing this character, and I feel like that character and the work that she's put into that character warrants more than an afterthought.
I agree completely.
Well, years ago when I was still in college, I was reading this book called Tales from the Script. And I believe it was Kevin Smith who actually had a detailed script for a Black Widow movie. And this was pre-MCU. He had a all laid out script ready for Black Widow that was about to actually get some traction under it, and it just for some reason fell through, if I'm remembering that correctly. But
I don't remember Kevin Smith doing a screenplay, but I do remember David Hayter.
It may have been David Hayter.
It was David Hayter.
It was I think it was David Hayter who almost he not only wrote a screenplay, but he was about to direct it too. This was.
Yeah, I read something about that. Yeah, I was wondering, wait, which David Hayter are we talking about? Oh, that David Hayter.
The Solid Snake David Hayter. Oh, and
the Guyver David Hayter. Okay.
Yeah. And I think the unfortunate thing is the movie didn't get made simply because, the MCU was about to unfold and they didn't want any outside studios taking over anymore.
So my thought was, I wonder how much of the script got salvaged or if this is like written from the ground up.
Oh, I highly doubt they used anything from Hader's script. Highly doubt.
There's always the possibility. So I think that wraps up our discussion. I mean, we've kind of, like Gigi said, beat a dead horse with a beat dead horse.
But wait, did we talk about Florence Pugh yet?
I don't think
so. Oh, right. So,
who?
More?
And was
charming.
The ending nihilistic?
God.
I think so. I think it's pretty nihilistic. No, but
we did find out what God needed with the starship.
That's good. It's important.
E-I-E-I-O.
Do you guys want to do our poorly pitched or pitch perfect, whatever it's called?
No, I don't.
All right. Dave, what was it?
I don't know. I think you had it last time.
No, you had it last time.
No, you had it last time.
Oh, yeah. You're right. Yeah, you're right.
Get on our level, Dave.
This is why I don't own the show.
Right. Get on Rebecca's level. Step up.
But don't cross her. It'll be another 12, 13 episodes before we hear from you.
In case you don't remember it from last time, the poorly pitched was... an old guy kidnaps an overweight Asian boy.
I think I know what it is.
Okay.
Everybody knows. Up.
Go, Rebecca.
Up.
Yep.
There we go.
Yeah, there it is. To be fair, and it's been a while since I've seen it.
He doesn't really...
Isn't it his fault? That he ends up going with.
Yeah, he didn't kidnap him. The kid was there. He
didn't return him, that's for sure.
Accidental kidnapping.
Who's got one for this episode?
Anyone? Anyone? Everyone?
I have another one.
Oh.
Okay.
Please.
Blow it off, Dave.
Aptly worded.
Can you say that?
A guy is having an exceptionally bad day on the way to work.
Oh, this has to be. Okay. Okay. I think I know. I don't know if the other two know.
Maybe.
We'll wait until next week to hear Rebecca's tuned guesses. All right, Fanboy 50, who's up?
I will go.
Gee. Who's got him? Because I'm late.
I got it. All right. Are you ready?
I'm ready.
Set. Go.
All right. I just want to point out and announce to the world that we've made it, guys. We received a copyright takedown on Twitter for posting leaked images of the 1989 Batmobile from the set of The Flash on our Twitter. I decided to log in, check and see what's going on with our Twitter, and was welcomed by a copyright strike against us. And as I'm trying to get our account back up, it took much longer than it should have because I am laughing. Just the Batmobile. We all know what the Batmobile looks like.
Time.
Watch this episode get taken down.
Right. Spotify season.
That's when we truly have made it.
I was so tickled that we got that. 230 something followers on Twitter, and we got that. That's well, good. People that's are good. Listening, yes. Yeah, no, at least Warner Brothers did.
Guys, Warner Brothers likes us.
That's like getting an autograph from somebody, but it's actually a restraining order.
Wow. Okay, who's up next? Dave, do you want to go? Sure, I'll go.
Yeah. I got you. Runner set.
Okay.
Nope.
Go on, JR.
Wait, what?
Dave, you're going.
Dave, you're going.
Okay. Oh, okay, I'll keep it short and sweet.
Because Dave,
I'm talking. I'll keep it short and sweet. My wife dyed her hair blonde,
and you scare me.
Yes. And I have been affectionately saying that she went Super Saiyan. Thank you. Good night.
Oh my gosh. And did she do it today?
She did it like a couple days ago. Yesterday.
Oh, actually. Tell me. Oh, it was yesterday. Oh, it was storming yesterday. That's perfect.
Yes.
Oh my God. You need to play the Super Saiyan theme for her sometime, like walk.
Next time she walks in the room, just yell, "It's over 9,000!
Or ask her, "What are you?"
Yeah, what are you?
The legends are true.
Honey, next time you walk in the room, just say, "I've never felt a power like this one." Better yet, make your own scouter that just like breaks on its own somehow.
Y'all are making my fanboy 50 for me, so I appreciate that. I'm sure I'm at time.
we'll call it time. We'll call it time. JR, I think you have one next.
All right, JR. 3, 2, 1, go.
So I've been watching The Bad Batch, and that supposedly ends at episode 12. Makes me sad. I watched Loki. That's ended, so that makes me sad. At least I know I'm getting a season 2 out of that. So I decided to watch the adaptation of the comic book Sweet Tooth on Netflix. Awesome show. Executive producer is Robert Downey Jr., but that's ended, so I don't know what to do with my life now. So I just mainly sit and play Jurassic Park Evolution, which is like Sim City, but with dinosaurs. And I purposely let the dinosaurs loose. The end.
But does it make you sad?
It makes me quite happy, actually. I've named it Jurassic Chomp.
Rebecca, you ready?
All right, I was born ready.
Okay. Can I request something?
Yeah.
When you talk about something frantically and you're trying to meet the time, don't make sure your voices are going up higher and higher until you can't say anything anymore. You're just a few. Okay.
She's encouraging us to learn auto-tune, okay?
That was two episodes ago, okay? Give me a break. All right.
Never.
Set, go.
Well, a few weeks ago, G and I did some traveling. We were on our way to see family, and we went by plane. Now, he and I don't fly that much, so it's always both a treat and disaster to take the opportunity. Once we get over the layovers and the turbulence and the jetway malfunctions, we're fine. But seeing the world outside of an airplane is truly breathtaking. We've flown above through a pool of mountainous clouds. I've seen desert mountains with swirls and scarce amount of shrubbery. They look like a lot of fudge ripple ice cream, without the ice cream part. I've seen different colored patches of land that looked like a colossal quilted blanket. Flying home, I watched as the sun followed me until it set, and all I could see were lights in the city at night, looking like stars on the ground instead of in the sky. There's always something magical about flying. You
time.
What?
I also saw a Pontiac with a giant rocket strapped to it.
But
Dave, let her talk about her shrubbery.
The mountainous clouds.
There's always something magical about flying. You literally see new worlds out there.
All right, no, we are time.
Shining, shimmering, splendid.
Can
tell me, princess.
JR, end it for us. End it.
Rebecca, stop talking. Wait a minute, what am I doing? See you guys next 13 episodes. I'm sorry, Rebecca. Please forgive me.
Got him.
I've been your host this week, JR. If you like my ramblings, you can find me over on Twitter at littleman_says1. And I've also got the Instagram, littlemancosplay.
I'm Dave. I do another podcast with my Super Saiyan wife called Pizza and Parsecs. And you can check us out on pizzaandparsecs.com.
Oh, it's my turn, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Hey, I'm G. You can find me on... I'm G. Oh my gosh. Okay, I'm G. You can find me on Twitter at G-Man and Mysterioid, and you can check out my Substack called Deferential Wrath of a Rusting Markalite Cannon at markalite.substack.com.
And I'm Rebecca. If you'd like to check out some of my artwork, you can find me on the Linktree app, linktr.ee/reb.hudge. Commissions are still open, and on August 27th through 29th, I will be at the Artist Alley at the Ranger Stop and Pop Con in Buckhead, Atlanta, Georgia. If you want to stop by and buy some of my prints, have me do a quick drawing for you, or simply talk, I will be there.
And we are the podcast known throughout the multiverse as The Drift Space. Take a look at our show at bit.ly/TDSlinks, where you can find us on all your favorite podcatchers. If you like what you heard, share it with a friend. Re-listen, rewind, retweet. Who cares? Do whatever. And as always, we'd like to thank you for listening, and don't forget to say hello. We always say hi back. And as always, my friends, stay strapped.
Shreddery. Or don't. Who cares?
Shrubbery.
Shrubbery.